Welcome to the 222 Paranormal Podcast Spooktacular!
Oh, scary.
Halloween Spooktacular, Joe.
You know, I looked in the mirror and I got scared.
I would too if I looked in your mirror.
Did you notice anything different about me?
No.
I used Just for Men.
I know, I always noticed.
I'm like, it's supposed to be light brown. It turned out black. So my mustache and my hair is black again.
Way to go. But you're goth. Joe went goth, everybody.
It'll wear out in a couple of days. So, but Halloween Spooktacular, we have an awesome show today.
I do. You guys buckle up, buttercups. It's going to be a good one.
We got some great guests with us.
We have Nadine and John from Black Swamp Paranormal come to tell us all about our trip to Ogley's Village.
Hi, yeah.
In Defiance, Ohio.
So welcome.
Hello, everybody.
Hey.
How are you?
Feeling spooky.
I know. This is our favorite time of the year, right?
Yeah.
It's wonderful. Welcome back to the show. You guys have been on the show many times before. Once or twice, probably.
A few times, yeah. A
couple times.
With some very interesting. Yeah,
we're like a bad disease. We keep coming back.
Repeat offenders. No, we love having you guys on the show because you always bring us very interesting paranormal conversations. You guys have had some many great places that you've investigated, have been to, you guys have been all over the place. Tell our listeners some of the places that you've investigated.
Okay, so let's see. Oh, in Pennsylvania, we've been to Nemacolin Castle. We've been to Hillview 3 times. We investigated the former top secret POW interrogation camp that's now Michaux State Park or something.
That's interesting. I never heard of that one.
Yeah. Oh, it's been a lot of things. It was a Girl Scout camp.
It was a Christian camp afterwards, yes.
Yeah. Oh, and there was a cult that was there for a while.
Really?
Yeah, it's a fun place. And that was just Pennsylvania. We've done Tennessee, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been a lot of places.
Well, we all went together to a certain place. Joe, tell everybody where we went.
I forget the name of it. What was the actual name of the place?
Ogley's Village.
Ogley's Village. It's cool because it's a village that they actually brought in from other places. I mean, all the buildings are the original buildings, except they were brought in from a different area. And a lot of them, or some from only miles away and others from farther away. And it's cool because they kept the actual buildings the way they were.
Now, were those all from Ohio area, correct?
They're generally from this region, okay. Yes.
Now, we had, probably about 17 buildings, maybe? Were there that many?
I want to say there has to be between maybe 12 to 17.
Yeah. It was interesting because before I got there, I didn't really know anything about it, and I really didn't want to. I kind of wanted to go in sight unseen and just try to understand, not have a preconceived notion of what was going on there. But it was really interesting. There were newer buildings that had older objects in it. You know, there's little museums and barns and outbuildings and cabins, and I really enjoyed the post office and the doctor's office. Those were two of my favorite places that we got to go into. Not so much for paranormal, because we really didn't experience too much. I liked the history of it. Looking through the little desks, like every place had like little, it was almost like you're stepping back in time. And like,
it's the details.
Yeah.
Yeah,
amazing. Like the stamps and the post office, and you open the drawers and there's still things in the drawers and you can discover little things. Like we were in the doctor's office and inside one of the desks, I opened the door and there was this little wooden box in there and I pulled it out and it was like wedged in there. Remember that, Joe? And I pulled it out and I got it out and it was really interesting, ornate. That's the wind.
Okay.
And it was this wooden box and it had like brass inlay in it, and you opened it up and it was a doctor's kit. There were bone saws in there. Yeah. There were, I don't know if there were needles in there, but just different types of cutting objects in this gorgeous and velvet lined box. And, you know, just digging through that was just amazing.
It was like the doctor's private kit for surgery.
Yeah, you could tell it was very expensive and when it was.
The knife was like 6 inches long, and it was still just as sharp as probably the day it was made.
Yeah, it was.
And the bone saw and all that.
Well, there again, they don't make them like they used to.
No, right, exactly.
I mean, you look at some of these ancient swords from Japan, and they're timeless. Mm-hmm. They just last forever.
But it was neat because knowing that nowadays a doctor walks into his office or walks into a hospital and they have everything for him.
Yeah.
Back then, he had to buy this kit and he kept it with himself.
Today, everything's disposable too. Mm-hmm. You use a knife and you throw it away.
Yeah.
You use this, you throw it away. And with him, you know, you use this bone saw and then you hand it to your nurse and have her clean it before you put it back in this nice velvet box. Yeah.
Right.
Because you're going to use it again on the next guy.
Yeah, I just couldn't get over like the detail of the artifacts and the antiques that they had in there, and you know how it just like every little cabin or outbuilding was just so like you're walking right in to at that time. So I like really enjoyed that. Now you guys have been there before, correct?
Yes.
You had investigated there. Tell everybody a little bit about some of the places you investigated and some of the things that you or you know maybe spirits that you had run into.
The first time we were there, we didn't go into the canal keeper's house. I don't know why we never got there. Mm-hmm. The second time, I don't think we made it either. But the third, we actually made it in there. And we got... No, yes, we did.
The second time we were in there.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I apologize for that.
No, you're fine.
Because there's a scale in there. And the scale is interesting because you can put like a K2 on it or a REM pod or, you know, pretty much anything. And for whatever reason, it goes off. There's something about the scale. There's no history that's attached to it. So they don't know where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something about the scale and it seems to have someone attached to it. Because if you play with it or you touch it, they don't like it. Because that's when your equipment starts going off. So if you go into the canal keeper's house, you know, depending upon what you want to have happen, you may not want to touch that scale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I touched it and I ended up almost throwing up in the yard outside. The doctor's office, it's like you said, they've got the journals there. And there's like a pen laying there and, you know, a quill and all this other stuff. And we had a woman crying asking for her baby the second time we were there.
Wow.
And then she asked if she could cross over.
Really?
We got those words on an obelisk. You know, Lori Shepherd was with us and she had said, do you want to go home? And she said, cross over.
Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of sad, you know. I mean, sometimes you get into that and it's, you find, you know, you get into the environment and you can feel what it is. And then you get, you know, different evidence through different devices and it kind of backs up that feeling you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of sad sometimes.
The Kinner cabin, though, I'd have to say the very first time we went, it was on a public ghost hunt. And before I ever even walked into the building, I just could tell she was screaming, get out.
Now, what is that building?
The Kinner cabin?
Mm-hmm.
It's a log cabin at the back of the property next to the lake. And it's a two-story log cabin. I got very familiar with the bats upstairs.
Yeah.
there's several bats living upstairs. And as evidenced by fecal matter.
Yeah.
Mm.
But most people don't really pay attention that close to see the bats. You go up there with a thermal camera, you see the little bright spots on the ceiling where the bats are hanging out.
That was the first building we went into then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We went in when it was still light out. Mm. And, you know, it was interesting. So I don't know. For some reason around the fireplace, I just felt a little like there was some lady, like a lady close to the fireplace. For some reason, that was kind of what I was picking up on.
That would have been Mrs. Kenner. She doesn't like people in her kitchen. Mm. When I was there the first time, we had set some devices on there, and she kept setting off a K2 meter and a REM pod. She doesn't want you touching her sink.
Mm. Yeah, you kind of got to be careful in there, too. You got to keep your... They actually have a Wi-Fi set up there. So you have to make sure your equipment's away from the hot spots, you know, the Wi-Fi points, which is kind of nice because if you want to go out there and you know, I don't know, did we have access to the Wi-Fi on that?
No.
I don't think we did. We were just going straight up.
No, we didn't need it, though, because we have hot spots on our phone.
Right. Our cell phones did all right. Mm-hmm. But it was just like, they do have Wi-Fi around the place, which is kind of funny because here you have an old... Old log cabin. And here's some lights up here. And what the heck is that? Oh, that's Wi-Fi signal.
I was so with the K2 meter over there, and it kept going crazy. I'm like, all right, they said something by the fireplace.
Right.
And I looked, and I saw the light behind. They have a jar in front of it.
Right. So you have to be careful.
And I was like, oh, man, come on. Why? Yeah. You know, to me, it kind of bugged me that they had it there because there's activity by the fireplace.
Yeah.
But then they have a Wi-Fi connection on the fireplace.
I think there's one outside right on the end of the lock keeper's house, too. Is. And right there by the road going back into the woods. And like I said, you just need to try and avoid those with different sensitive equipment. Yeah. Otherwise, you're going to get freaked out by it.
Now, I heard that Mr. Kenner does not like people going into the cabin without his permission.
No, he doesn't. You should ask permission before you go in there, mm-hmm. or he can get nasty with you.
Mm-hmm.
The second time we were there, we had a piece of equipment on the floor, and anytime I tried to ask a question, he kept making the music box go off.
Wow.
So I couldn't talk. And he would let other people talk, but because I forgot to ask, he wouldn't let me speak. So he's very, you know, strict about his rules.
And being from that era, you know, in what it would be like, what, around the 1800s?
Yeah, late 1800s into the 1900s. I think the woman actually died in the 50s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was the last time anybody actually lived in that house. I mean, lived in it.
Yeah, and that was very primitive. I mean, there was no bones about it, right? Like, it was just a log cabin.
Yeah, just
two-story leanings kind of sideways.
Do you know how many people had lived in that, though, at one point? 10 people.
Are you kidding me?
10 people had lived in that.
That's the size of someone's shed.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's two rooms. It's downstairs and upstairs. That's it.
I mean, can you imagine in the wintertime, like, you would just go, like, stir crazy. Like, I got to get out of here. There's so many people in here.
Well, I'll tell you what, back then it was probably along the lines of, you send all the boys out to do some chores.
Yeah.
Like, you and you go get some wood because we're going to get cold if we don't get it. You cook something. Just go along.
Yeah.
Put them all to work and it'll pass the day and they'll teach them some life skills.
And back then, I mean, the way we live right now, we're used to the way we live. Back then, they were used to the way they lived.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't have the things we have.
They had to work.
Never, you don't. I always think of it that way, is they didn't have what we have, so they wouldn't have no clue about it. So the way they lived, you know, was the right way to them.
Yeah. Well, too, you have to think about it. The Kenner cabin was like a luxury compared to some homes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Back then, that was big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even for 10. Now, they didn't always have 10 because they lost some of their kids when they were young, but people would actually envy these people for having a cabin that size. And we look at it going, oh, Lord, I couldn't put my stuff.
I could imagine.
I
could not imagine. I mean, how big do you think it is? 30 by 20?
About that, yeah.
Yeah.
Two stories at 30 by 20, so it's two rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, you look at it, and upstairs was bedroom, probably all bedroom.
Yeah.
And at night, you send all the kids upstairs, mom and dad, lay in the bed downstairs, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Make more kids.
There were a lot.
I do know that if you don't go to the Kenner cabin by 10 o'clock, you're probably not going to get as much activity unless you want to deliberately go there to upset Mr. Kenner. So
do you think he's residual or intelligent? Like, is he doing the same thing over and over, but...
I want to say he's probably an intelligent haunting because he does act a little erratic. You know, like anytime anyone else would want to talk the second time we visited, mm-hmm. he never did anything. But the minute I opened my mouth, even if I hadn't said anything, he would make something go off that made noise.
Wow.
So I want to go with he's probably very intelligent, and he is there.
I haven't reviewed the footage, but the last time we were there, you were there. I had set up all the trail cams through the woods and down mm-hmm. the trail, and we wanted to catch either a wildlife or any activity or shadows or anything that we might be able to find out there. And after I got done setting it up, I went to go find Nadine, and I saw lights in the Kenner cabin. Mm. So I figured, well, she's in there. So I walked down the path, and I quietly stepped up, opened the door, and there was nobody in the cabin. Uh-huh. But I could have sworn I saw lights in there. Okay, so I went in there, and I sat down quietly. I thought maybe they're upstairs, you know. Sat there quietly, nothing. I thought, oh, okay. So I pulled out my task cam, and I started recording. And I sat there. Again, I haven't reviewed this footage yet because, well, I'm a slug. I just procrastinate. But I sat there, and I could see people coming up the path. And I started going along the lines with questioning about, hey, there are people outside with lanterns. What do you think? I said, should I let them in? And I started a line of questioning like that. Like, I used words like lanterns and mm-hmm. and old era terms. And again, I'm kind of curious to see if anything came out of that.
Yeah.
It wound up being Maureen and Andrea coming up there. And they came in the door. Here I am just sitting there in the dark looking at them, you know, kind of surprised them. Yeah.
Yeah.
But... Weirdo.
Yeah. I love doing that, though.
Yeah.
Sitting in the room and you see people coming. So you just sit back and quiet, and they'll walk in, and sometimes they notice you, and sometimes they don't, and all of a sudden you just move. And
he's good at that.
Well, yeah, I would see. I tend to walk that around. Would scare me. I don't use a flashlight. Yeah. I don't. I try to keep it as bare bones as possible. Mm-hmm. I'd be quiet. I don't use a light. I maneuver through the dark. I mean, I did that in the Army. I can do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you get used to it.
And you get used to yeah. it. Yeah. And other people, they're just like flashlights flying all over the place. And yak, 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 yak. And that's fine, too. That's who they are. But it kind of freaks them out because I am quiet and I'm moving around in the dark. Mm-hmm. But, they'll get over it. They're big boys and girls. They'll figure it out.
That's you get your eyes used to the darkness. Mm-hmm. And then someone comes in with a flashlight and shines it on you. And you're like, put that thing
and
down.
It was very, I noticed, like, when I first got there and it first got dark, it was very dark out there. Yeah. Like, you know, we were city dwellers. So, like, to be out in the country and you know, the moonlight, for a while, it seemed very dark to me. Like, super dark. But as we were out there and the more we were out there.
You adjusted.
You didn't even need flashlights.
Yeah.
Just walk around.
By the end of the night, you were walking.
I only did because I'm very clumsy and like I could trip over a pebble, right? So I have to be very careful like when I'm walking because I'm like.
It's an interesting property though. The whole property itself, each little building has a different story. Each little building has a ghost. Even the property itself has ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Correct.
I remember you telling me about a little girl that was shot on the shooting range. And also there was somebody that in the new shooting range way in the back passed away. So there's spirit out there.
Plus you've got, you know, they all come from different places and different times. You've got the railroad station. You're talking to people who were waiting to go somewhere. They sat in that room. And then also the husband and wife team, you'll see them in that little office there. And if you go up and you literally just bang your hand on there and you tell them you need to get a ticket to go somewhere, we mapped someone sitting in a chair on an SLS camera.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't even get in that building. I didn't get in there. I was
There were a couple different people that noticed someone standing in the doorway at the rail station. Mm-hmm. I mean, one woman saw it, but then somebody else had confirmed it by saying, did you happen to see it look like? And she's like, yeah.
One saw the legs and the other saw the top.
Oh, really?
Really? Yes. Wow. That is interesting.
Yeah. And it's interesting because you don't know what you're going to run into.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. none of that is connected. Mm-hmm. And yet they all seem to have become...
A village.
A village.
Yeah.
Now, what building did you think or area had the most activity?
I want to say probably the war museum.
Military museum.
The military museum, because anytime you involve war into something, you're involving a lot of crises.
Yeah.
In crises situations where someone might die, they might not know they're dead, or there's a lot of stress that tends to leave a lot of imprints. Mm-hmm. And you're never really bored in that room. You always get somebody.
Now, in that room, you know, they have, from many different wars, all types of memorabilia. There's flags and uniforms and, you know, pictures of the soldiers. There's weaponry.
Pieces of equipment, weaponry.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. There's every... And
from all different years, too.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There's no any one...
Yeah, there's everything.
It's just everything. It's
Revolutionary, 1812, Civil War, World War One, mm-hmm. Two.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Very emotional type of objects. Even if you weren't in the military, it still sparks an emotion because you know that the strife that happened, you know, with these objects and the especially uniforms for me. Like, I always think that energy is absorbed into that fabric.
Well, how couldn't it be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they wore it in that fear. It's almost like a house. You have to think of it like houses are alive. If you have a house that's been around for any length of time like yours, mm-hmm. it's had lives go through it. It's got memories in it, you know, good, bad. So the same would be applied to a uniform off of a soldier.
Right. And I always think, too, because, you know, you have fear. And when you fear, you sweat. And your sweat soaks into your,
right.
into your clothing. And that's really that emotion is almost physically in that clothing. And then, you know... If you die and you have blood on it as well.
Right.
Interesting.
You know, and we talk about emotion. You're talking extreme fear. I mean, this is a wartime situation. Bombs are going off all around you. You don't know the next second if you're going to be dead or in pieces.
Right.
Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, you had very young men. In the earlier wars, I would say, like, mm-hmm. the, you know, like the 1812 and the Civil War, you have very young, scared kids.
Well, weren't they literally, like, taking them from when they were 12 on?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's that we call that a child.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah.
And you're handing them a weapon and you're telling them, go.
Yeah. Interesting. Especially, you know, with the Civil War, you had so many young people leaving their homes and literally... walking hundreds and hundreds of miles, you know. So if that's not a recipe for hunting, I don't know what is.
That's part of it too, is like the War of 1812 up here. I go to the battlefields up here in Maumee, Ohio, and in Toledo and stuff. And you read the plaques and they're like, the Kentuckians walked this far or came from Kentucky. They walked.
I know.
Could you imagine coming and like, the battlefield up in Monroe, the River Raisin battlefield, they were from Kentucky that right. walked all the way up here for a half-hour battle and died.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, John, when you're in the military, because you have been in the military and you're in the military museum, do you feel like maybe the spirits present themselves to you a little bit more because you guys have that common bond?
No, I wouldn't say so.
No?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I can understand some of the things that they might feel. I mean, there are a lot of times you have to deal with things in the military. I mean, something as simple for me was chemical mask. Mm. Okay, I was issued a gas mask when I was in the Army. And I looked at it like, okay, here I have one gas mask. It's my gas mask. And if I'm on post and somebody starts chemically bombing post, my family's there. Okay, I have one gas mask.
Mm-hmm.
Do I give it to someone in my family? I can't give it to a kid because a kid will take it off and wind up dead anyway. Mm-hmm. I give it to my wife. She's not the warrior to fight. Mm-hmm. So it would save her life, but she's still, now she's got to live without me because I'm going to die. So here I am with one gas mask. I have to put it on. I have to watch my family die. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it is in battle, is you have to, there's a lot of things that you have to consider and look at ahead of time and deal with before you go into battle. And then once you're there, you're presented with a whole new line of statistics mm-hmm. that you got to deal with, and it can be scary.
Do you think the spirits take that into the afterlife, those fears?
I would think so. I mean, it's very powerful. Like Nadine said, you can't go through something that intense and you know, they say, you know, you can't create or destroy energy. It only changes. Okay, and it's the same way there. I mean, yeah, somebody died on the battlefield, but they didn't just go away. Mm-hmm. That doesn't go away. You've got on a physical property, all those electrons have to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, the nucleus of their being is being going into the soil. It's moving about the universe that we live in. Mm-hmm. If you look at it from a spiritual level, it's the same way, that all that electrical energy is released, all that spiritual energy is released. Where's it going? What's it doing? Is it part of what's these remnants that are left over?
You know, and
we don't know.
There's been many times where we talk to the spirit, and if it's a wartime thing, they're still living that war in their realm.
Yeah.
We've asked many times of different like battlefield stuff and that, and it seems like they're still in that war. In the state that they're in.
Yeah.
Now, were there any spirits that you guys picked up in that particular building?
When we were there, we picked up a young lady. I can't remember her name, but she was attached to the Revolutionary War, and she seemed really fond of our son.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you could feel her. It was cold around you, and there were other people present who felt the room change, and it was cold.
Mm-hmm.
And she just wanted to talk to him. Anytime he talked, she would respond.
Wow.
And then there was another one. His name was Paul. And he was German.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up trying to use, you know, Google, where you make it say something in different mm-hmm. languages.
Like
and
a translator.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And we actually did get a response that was 9.
Okay.
You know, and we're not sure if that was like, you know, him saying no, or, you know, if it was mm-hmm. the number, but he talked to us for a very long time. And then when I went and spoke to Eric, who actually, he facilitates the place
okay.
for Austin Maynard, his group basically runs the place for the owner. And Eric had said to me, I said, you know, have you ever heard of a Paul before? He went, yes, he's a soldier.
Wow.
So we had talked to him for probably 15 minutes.
Cool.
And, you know, I went out and he went, really? You know, and then we've heard the name Joe, too.
Okay.
But Joe doesn't stay in one building.
Joe and John, too.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't stay in one building. They can go in any building. We were up in the schoolhouse and we had someone tell us that John killed someone.
Really?
And that their chest hurt.
Oh, wow.
And then we went to another building and we got that Joe was the one that was hurt. So we don't know who they are. We just know that somehow their stories connect.
Oh, that would be so interesting if you could find some kind of historical documents tying these people. Now, like if you could get a last name too, you know.
Yeah, right. That's golden ticket there.
Right.
You know, right. We did, what'd you call that? We did put Jen in the headphones.
That's called the Estes Method.
Okay. I can never remember the name. I always say the silent spirit box session.
Right. It started at the Stanley Hotel. Okay. That's where they first did it. And it was Connor Randall and Carl Pfeiffer. And there was a young woman who was involved in it, too. And I hate slighting her, but I just can't think of her name. Mm-hmm. But they had started that type of technique for investigating and had found that it was very productive. And we've used it many times.
Newkirks, they do use it too.
Yeah.
Greg and Dana.
Yeah,
Newkirk,
they use it a lot.
So, and it worked. It seems to be rather well.
We plugged it in with Jen.
I was the guinea pig.
She was a guinea pig. And we ran the session, and I'll play it for you guys, and you'll be able to hear what they actually got. So let's play the session. It was originally 16 minutes long. There were some gaps where nothing happened, so I shortened it down. But it's really interesting because the responses were almost dead on. So let's play it for you guys, and we'll be right back after 7 minutes. All right, we're back in the military museum. If there's any spirits in here that want to talk, now's the time to do it.
Hello?
Come into this room. Come join us. Are you here with us?
I am.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you?
Joe.
Where are you from? Come back and talk to us. Where are you from? Are you from England? I'm moving on the rail.
Hi.
I? Did she say I?
Did you say I or hi? Please repeat that.
I is naval for yes.
Mm-hmm. Are you a naval soldier?
I did.
The British naval soldiers.
I know we called them limeys because the old British sailors would take citrus with them to keep from getting scurvy. Mm.
Tonight.
Joe, did you go home to your mother?
I'm out there.
This is the person you asked earlier if he visited his mother after the war. And he said often.
Often, yeah.
Do you still visit your mother?
What?
Is that you, Joe? Or are you referring to the soldiers? What country are you from?
Does something of yours, is it in this building?
Why are you still here? Do you have a reason to be here?
Hurry.
What year is it? Do you remember what year it is?
21.
Was that you?
Mm-mm. I thought it was you.
No.
Sound like turning a flashlight on and off.
What war are we in? Can you tell me what year it is again?
'11. 1911. Now. Oh man, I'm here.
What do you want? What color is your uniform? What state are we in?
Hey.
How many of you are here? Come on, tell us, how many of you are here? We can't see you. You have to let us know.
That was me.
Okay.
Do you ever see your friends and family? Do you still see them?
Credit.
Credit?
That's what she said.
Who died? What is in this room? Can you see this room?
No.
Do you know where you are?
That's me. What can you see?
What?
Where are you?
Is it dark?
Woodline.
Woodline.
Are you in the field? Are you still on the battlefield?
Outside.
What do you see outside? We're inside. We thought you were with us. Where are you?
I'm here.
Where at? Can you see where you are?
Is there light where you are?
Yes.
Is it light from the sun?
6.
We can't see you. Let us know where you are.
Is it peaceful where you are?
Walking.
Where? Tell us where. We can't see you.
So we walk into the room?
How?
Is there fighting? Are you afraid?
No. Who are you?
We are curious seekers. Wishing to talk to you.
We're not soldiers, we're civilians.
We're friends.
If you understand, say hi. Do you hear us?
Yes.
We're not in the military, we're not here to take you. Do you believe us? We're going to stop talking.
Hello?
We're going to stop talking to you here in a minute. We need you to communicate with us. We need to know that you're actually here. All right, that's been 16 minutes. I'm going to end it.
Okay, so you know what, I really enjoyed doing that because yeah. You just focus. Okay, so I had blindfold on, I had noise canceling headphones, and then I had earbuds in that went into the SB7, and I really enjoyed that because you just focus on what you hear. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not being stimulated by, you know, your sight or, you know, I don't know. I thought it was really cool.
And we got that response, Joe.
Yeah,
right away.
Yeah.
And then, you know, different responses, like when we said, what do you see? Is it light there? I mean, you heard the responses that we got. Like,
I love the responses, though, because I've often wondered about who are we talking to and where are they? They're not seeing what we see.
Mm-hmm.
We've actually had people tell us it was fall where they are.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was July where we were.
They were shoveling coal.
And
getting ready
Joe
for the winter.
That we were talking to said it was daylight.
Yeah.
He said he was looking at a tree line and he was walking.
Uh-huh.
And we were sitting in a building and it was 2:00 in the morning.
Yeah.
And he couldn't even see us.
And that's the thing. It brings up thoughts of, I do this all the time, where I think, where are they? Are they somewhere hearing voices and saying, there's ghosts in this building, wherever that where they're at,
yeah.
And that's us.
That sounds like some John Tenney shit there.
Yeah. But it's true. You know, you think of, because there's so many times where the response that we got just for that little session that Jen did, the 16-minute session, they were dead on.
And I wish we would have recorded what I heard through the SP7 because I was hearing the same male voice.
Okay.
It was the same voice. And then there was one time... I heard a woman's voice and it said, I think you guys had asked who's here. Something to that effect. Yeah. And I said, Barbara. Clearly. She's like, Barbara.
Oh, see, we didn't catch it on the recording.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That was kind of early in the session.
Okay.
But yeah, it was interesting because I wish you guys could have heard the same voice.
I've actually done that Estes before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if it affects you, but when I do it, I don't know if it's because of the whole deprivation thing. That's what that's really about, is deprivation. Mm-hmm. You're taking away certain things from you so you can focus, solely on. And you're listening to this SB7, and after a while, it really starts to affect you. And mm-hmm. when I've done that Estes, I'll get so far in that when someone, just like you, when someone touches you, it's like you were someplace else.
Yeah. And that's why during the session, I said, can you show yourself? I don't know if I did it at this session, but I was like, can you show yourself to Jen? Show your face to Jen. I think it was a different one that we did. Yeah, I think it was when we were here.
Yeah.
But because you get into that trance-like state, and I did this because I watched Greg and Dana do it, and he was sitting there doing it, and he said, or Greg said, I see people. And he's not clairvoyant.
Mm-hmm. No, correct.
And he said that he could actually see these people as if they were in front of him.
And I don't know if it's just your eyes, because you are, you know, you have your eye blindfold on, but you start to see pops of color. Like I saw like red and green, but I don't know if that's just something visual with your actual eyes.
So I don't know, because I see the same thing when I'm doing the float tank session. I see colors in there. Yeah.
Well, there are actually people who can see sounds. You know, it's like they'll hear a noise and their brains actually see a color. There's different neural cross intersections that do that sometimes with people. And even at that, I don't think this is what's happening with you, but I mean, there are, I too have had issues where, bad word. Sounds like I'm a mental case. Maybe I am. But
you didn't want to chime in on that.
But there have been times where I have actually, in the pitch black, I have had seen images of a face and who, you know, and it's crystal clear and you see the face and you know exactly what it looks like, but you have no idea what you're picturing.
Yeah.
I think, though, that there's more to it than that. I think that I get what you're saying, but having done this as many times as I have, when you are deprived of some senses, you're sitting there and it's like you're so focused that the spirits are using you as a tool.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about intent. And it's you have to look at it like if you've ever done Black Mirror Scrying. Mm-hmm. You sit in a room and you do Black Mirror Scrying. It's very dimly lit. You're looking in this mirror. And have you ever asked yourself, it's not what's really in the mirror, it's what's in your head.
Yeah.
And you're picking it up and you're seeing it, but you're perceiving it from somewhere.
The mirror is just to clear your mind.
Mirror is a tool. You're the actual, you know, focus. You're the conductor. And I think it's highly possible that you can perceive whole pictures of your surroundings if you're in tune enough to it.
And what I noticed when I had the headphones on and then the noise canceling headphones over that, you know, when you have an SB7, it goes...
Correct.
I stopped hearing that part of it, and I just started hearing the words.
Yeah, correct.
But it took a while. It took about 10, 15 minutes. Like, you get to that point where that totally tunes out.
Hmm.
And then you just hear the words, which I thought was, like, kind of weird. But, like, yeah, you get into it, like, almost like a trance-like state.
Right, you
and
do.
And then when somebody taps you because, you know, like, you're so... You know, I guess you would just be like,
you're not into it.
Yeah.
You're very into it.
And I was going to ask you, I don't know if I did or not, but I was going to ask you how long you were in to see if it seemed like 16 minutes to you or it seemed like longer.
It seemed longer. It felt like an hour.
Okay. It seems like forever when you do those. Yeah. You should try it. Because when you go through the whole process, everything on the outside just ceases.
It was calming.
Yeah. It, you know, but sometimes if you hook on to someone who's bad, it can be bad.
Actually, Nadine is actually, during her sessions, there have been times when the sadness has overwhelmed her. Mm-hmm. And we're like, hey, come on, stop. You know, we have to stop it because I don't want to torture her with what's going on here. And I don't want her to go too deep into it. Mm-hmm. It's like sometimes it does get intense.
And that could affect you for days.
It does.
You know, I know, like Dana was talking when she was doing one of her sessions, I think it was with the God helmet, but she, after doing it, is depressed for days. Mm.
Well, yeah, I mean, but you would have to be, because you're permitting yourself to become a conductor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that wears on you. And if you think about it, you're feeling all these emotions. You're feeling everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were, I don't know if it was middle point, we were sitting up in one room, and I had picked up on a gentleman who had been the superintendent there, and he was so different than what people had labeled him as. He loved the fact that they were restoring the building and everything, but then I got to a point where there was someone else there. And this was a very heavy person. And I don't know if you've ever heard, when you've done the Estes, when I do the Estes, you should not be able to hear out of an SB7 screaming, mm-hmm. or growling or anything like that. But you cease to hear this, and all of a sudden you're hearing everything. Yeah. You're hearing crying and screaming, and you're hearing it.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder if you're not hearing it from the SB7, but you're picking it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know the Fulton County was pretty intense for you.
Oh, that was hard. That affected me. After we did the one at Fulton County, we actually put that on Facebook.
No, was that like a historical place, like Auglaize?
It's the old museum.
It's the one we're going to be
going
to. Fulton
County Museum.
Okay. We had a male who was suppressing a female and would not let her go. And she wanted to go, and he wouldn't let her. And he, just from what I could hear, I could tell it was a male who did not want this female to leave. And he was very adamant about it. And he started to growl, and his voice became so low. I felt like I was, have you ever watched a horror movie and you've heard those low, demonic, growly mm-hmm. voices? Yeah, it got very scary.
Yeah.
It got very hard for me to be there, and I had to quit.
Yeah. And you don't. I mean, do you encounter those type of, like, more, I don't want to say just oppressive spirits that often? Like, you guys do a lot of ghost hunting.
No,
so,
not really.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know, like, is generally...
You know, you watch the TV shows on TV, and it's always demons.
I know, you take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah,
right?
You kind of got to take that with a grain of salt. Because, yes, there may be demons out there that you... got to try to probably avoid.
I don't think we've ever encountered a demon.
I don't think so either.
But
knock on wood.
Yeah, don't want to.
A couple times we've encountered some very negative spirits, which I've run into, and it has affected me. But I think that's me. I feel like I'm ghost bait, because everywhere we go,
ghost bait,
something happens to me.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter where we go. They find us, like when
they know you're open to it. They know
that
you're sensitive.
Well, she's more
it.
Empathic than right. than most of the group, so she's the most susceptible to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was amazing. We were at Hillview, and we were standing in the embalming room, and I said nothing. I have a habit of not saying anything when I see things, because some people will say, "Oh, I see that."
Mm-hmm.
And when you stepped out beside me and you said, "Do you see that little girl in a white dress?"
Mm-hmm.
And I had been seeing her for probably 5 minutes before you said anything.
Yeah.
And she was just walking down the hall. And we were the only two people that saw that little girl.
Yeah.
I'm completely opposite. I don't see nothing. I'm like,
how do we get Joe to see something, right?
I know.
Like,
well, I've had the wall pushed over on me, and I've had conversations through our equipment, you know, but I've never
visually.
Actually, yeah, no,
like you. You know, we gotta tell the ghosts to show themselves to Joe. Not
well,
the scary
I, show
way.
Yourself to me.
I think.
What
well,
are you wearing?
Yes. I know. I think we were talking about this before the show, but I think there's times when you have to just walk into a room,
mm-hmm.
sit there quietly, and just feel the energy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so many times what we experience out there. I mean, sure, we've got a lot of little toys that go, that make noise and produce words, and maybe a novelist that's generating words for us to read. But a lot of the activity that we're experiencing is on a personal level. You know, the touching, the feeling, the feeling when you're sitting in a room in the dark by yourself and you know darn well that there's somebody watching you in that room. I mean, we went to a place down near Zanesville. What was the name of it? The
Millersburg?
No.
Where's Zanesville?
Okay, the mansion down there with the by the cornfield.
The mansion by the cornfield. Yeah. Was it the one with the little boy that likes to play and it had the really nice stairs? No,
the thing that came out of the cornfield, everybody saw it.
Oh, Prospect Place. Prospect Place.
Oh. Sorry, I suck at names. That's Prospect okay. Place. Okay, Prospect Place. For the most part, I'm not really freaked out by the dark. But at Prospect Place, I took some time to sit alone in the third floor, what they call the ballroom. It's kind of the attic, but it was used for balls, for get-togethers. And I was in that room for probably only about 5 minutes by myself, just sitting there quietly with a voice recorder. And I just had this feeling that someone was in the room with me. And I just sat there quietly and just bared it, you know, the best I could.
Yeah.
And throughout the night, I always had this feeling like someone was outside the building. Someone was like, it's next to a small village. So I'm thinking maybe some of the kids from around the village are outside. So while everybody else is doing their thing inside the building, I'd go outside and do a perimeter sweep. I'd go out and check outside and there's nothing. There's nothing. There's nothing. Every time I'd go outside to do a perimeter sweep, there's nobody out there. No kids giggling, no people running away. It just felt like somebody was always outside that building. And even in the barn, we were doing an investigation in the barn, and while everybody's doing their investigation, I was outside walking around the barn just to make sure there was nobody out there messing with us. Because I always had that feeling, and that's so unlike me to have that premonition, that feeling. Tell them what the women saw that night, hon.
We had three empaths present that night, and we kept feeling like someone was following us around. Then we were walking back from the barn, and we had just done an Estes thing, and we were walking back to the house. We were kind of shaken because we felt like someone was watching us from above. And nobody said anything. And, you know, then at one point I said, I'm sorry. I can't sit here. This is bothering me. I have to move.
No, in the barn, there was a man who was murdered, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Just for our listeners.
Yes. The long story short is that he was a bounty hunter and he came to pick up slaves that had run away. But when he had left, the slaves had gone and brought him back and hung him in the barn.
Okay.
And he's still there. And he is not a nice person. And there was also a little slave girl there, too. And there are so many parts of that building. George Adams, I think, built that building. And he was an abolitionist. And if you get the opportunity to go to Prospect Place, you should go. But I would highly recommend that you make sure you're fully prepared to go. Because what we saw there, we didn't understand what it was. We came around the corner, and from the cornfield, from out of the line, came running at us something that looked like, It was bizarre. It was hunched over and it had very long arms and it had a dog-like face, but it had no fur and it had like sores on it, and it came across the field and had red eyes, which automatically makes me panic.
Right.
And two or three other people saw it. One of them actually said, "Do you see that?" And as it got almost to us, it disappeared, just gone, that. And that is the one place we have been run out of.
Wow. That is that's the, you know, the really freaky thing is you can go, okay, that woman is crazy. But it wasn't just one crazy woman. It was what, three or four now?
Yeah, I went to the others and I asked them, when you saw what you saw, describe it to me. Mm-hmm. And they described the exact same thing that I saw. Oh, and each one of the women described the exact same thing that the other one saw. So how do you explain that?
Right.
Yeah.
There is no explanation for
that. That's Prospect Place. Yeah. What's the name of the town? Do you remember the name of the
town?
Trinaway.
I've heard so many stories about that place.
Yeah. It's again, to look at the building, it's a large mansion from the 1800s. And it's a nice place. I mean, mm-hmm. it's yeah. been kept up pretty fairly well for as old as it is. It's not pristine, but it's like I said, you got a roof, you got everything. Yeah, as long as it doesn't have too much water damage, you're okay. And they're doing what they can to fix it up. You know, they're using the money from ghost hunts to do trim work mm-hmm. and try and make it.
I would definitely
bring it back to its glory.
I'd definitely go back. But if I was gonna go there, I wouldn't go alone. I would take someone with you everywhere you go, because there's something about that building. And when we left, we turned off the lamp upstairs in what was the lookout, mm-hmm. where they would have a light or something up there to let people know. We turned that lamp off. And when we were backing out that driveway, that lamp was on.
Oh my gosh.
So, and there's that whole building is alive with activity. Mm. And some of it is not very pleasant.
Yeah. Well, you have a very tumultuous history, you know, with the whole Underground Railroad and the slaves and you know, being chased by these bounty hunters and, who knows what else had gone on.
And even the clashings of religions, too, because you had, like, the slaves were more like a voodoo type.
Exactly. Thing,
and the slave owners were more, not
Christian, I guess you would
kind
say.
Of, but what's the
Protestant?
Word? Protestant. That's what I was thinking.
He was an abolitionist, mm-hmm. and he was a Protestant. And he didn't have slaves. His father, George Adams' father, did have slaves.
Okay.
The son disagreed with it, became an abolitionist, and joined the railroad, the Underground Railroad, to save people. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's amazing what he did. But if you go into the basement of that property, you don't want to have to be the last one that goes down to get the camera.
Yeah.
And go back out. Because there's something about this property where we literally had a team who doesn't back down. And they wouldn't leave.
Yeah.
The living room area.
Oh, okay.
And I know this sounds ridiculous, but I walked in and I put my hands on either side of the door. And I said, I claim this room is mine. Nothing negative can come in here. This is only for positive. And no one wanted to leave that room.
Wow. And they did. It was kind of like base camp, and mm-hmm. you're going out on a mission. We're going to go to this room. You know, team of two or three people going out to this room, and then another team will leave the room and go out to this. Like they had individual missions to accomplish, and then they could return to the safe room.
But we did get done very early. Everyone was very tired, and everyone, after they had seen this or experienced something, they were very tired and they didn't want to do anything anymore.
Yeah.
And we ended very early that night. And it was almost like there was a trickster or something like that, like what do you want to call it? Mischievous type of spirit
mm-hmm.
that was there, because they would sit under the table in the hallway. They would scurry down the hall.
Wow.
And that one too was really good. I'll tell you why. I wonder how many of them would have stayed if they would have known that while we were taking the tour, I had been wearing a rosary, because I wore it under my shirts anytime mm-hmm. I went somewhere to protect myself. And this rosary just happened to be above my shirt, and it was lifted up and yanked off, and 6 inches of that was never found.
Oh my God.
And that was during the tour.
Wow.
And I never said anything to anyone. I just let it go. But there were two others that knew what happened, and that happened when we were 15 minutes in the building.
Wow. That's crazy.
And that was in the ballroom.
Yeah, I was going to say that happened in the ballroom where I had that heebie-jeebies about being in the dark.
Yeah. Now, speaking of being in the dark, when we were at Ogley's Village and we were out in the forest, we had some interesting things happen. Now, you guys had set up out by in the, way back in the back of the property of this land. You know, you can walk back into it's almost like a pea gravel road that heads back to the
armory. To the new shooting range.
Yeah, there's a shooting range way in the back. But you guys stopped about halfway to that location and kind of set up a little base camp there. What kind of activity were you getting in that particular spot?
Well, we started out, you know, because it was getting later, and I got to a point where I was thinking, I just want to sit here. Mm-hmm. So I
rest your feet.
Right. Yeah. So I was sitting there, and we were just talking, and we decided we'd set up some paranormal equipment, the K2s, the REM pods, you know, your basic stuff that lets you know if something's around. And we were talking, and we started hearing running in the woods directly behind us, and it didn't sound like an animal. It sounded like a person running. And it got the one girl a little scared so much that she turned around and she started facing the woods. And this continued for quite a while. And we thought, well, I don't know what that is. You know, and we tend to write a lot of stuff off. And then our equipment started going off. Just for no reason. Our equipment started going off. So we started asking questions and we were getting responses. Then you could hear the running behind us in the woods. And at this point, we had no clue that the woods behind us was literally, if you had gone just a little farther back, past over where the war building was where the range had, at one point had been. And when Eric actually came back, we had asked him, and Eric Moore had told us that that's where you'll hear the girl who was shot at the range. And I had asked him, and he said she literally just walked out onto the range while people were there and got shot and killed.
That's crazy. And the footsteps that you heard were definitely not animal. They were two-step.
It sounded more like human. It did, I mean, you kind of get a feel for the way a deer will trot through the woods. Well, I don't know if it's called a trot, but yeah, they kind of they get a rhythm to them. And small critters like possums and coons, they kind of shuffle through the leaves and they don't really sound like humans at all. But this actually did sound very human-like. And, you know, I'm the kind of guy that I'd rather just sit there in the dark and let it approach because I want to see if maybe it is a deer. Yeah. Maybe it is a human. Either way, I'd like to see it approach, but there were a couple people out there. It was overwhelming. They had to shine their flashlights out in the woods, try and find what was making that noise. Never did.
That was me.
Yeah.
I had a new flashlight.
Come on, shut the lights off.
I had a new flashlight. I had to check it out.
Yeah, you had a kick butt flashlight.
I did.
It's like, can never understand. We take people ghost hunting. Or even seasoned ghost hunters, and when something happens, they "What was that?" Or they freak out, and it's like
just let it happen.
That's what you come out here for.
Let it happen.
Yeah,
definitely. It was an interesting spot too. I don't know. There was kind of like a valley on the one side a little bit, and it was like open area. That was, I don't know. I kept just. Not sensing anything, but just feeling like I had to watch that area or look into that area.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this was 3 a.m. or 2 a.m.
Yeah, it was pretty late.
Yeah.
It was one of the last places we went before we went to the war museum.
One thing I don't like about it is it's like maybe a half mile from the highway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're getting some of the highway noise coming through the sensitive mics and stuff. Whereas you'd be trying to listen to EVPs for whispers or noises, and it's kind of hard to do with the traffic off in the distance.
And we heard that in the recording.
Exactly. Yeah. Besides the fact that in that recording, I sound like I was drunk. I was probably tired. I don't know.
Well, what's interesting is when we're listening to that, we asked a question, and you were outside.
Well, I was inside for the first part of what you played there. But then I went outside with the walkie-talkie, and that's you heard me.
You answered one of our questions over the walkie-talkie.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, they were asking me, where am I? And
yeah.
And, you know, we're trying to get together. And I was outside the room, but I didn't realize her walkie-talkie, or maybe it was your walkie-talkie,
yeah.
that I when I transmitted it came into you guys and it was coming off. It's like, wow, okay.
But what's so interesting about this place is it's a whole town. This is a huge property. It's the first time we've ghost hunted where you had to drive to an area,
yeah.
drop your gear off, do your investigation, and then drive. But we walked most of the night.
Yeah, we walked around.
It was a beautiful night.
It's not that big, but yeah. it's pretty big.
It was funny because when we were starting out, the guy that runs it, he was like, all right, so you can drive down to this building, and then you drive down. And we were like,
yeah,
I've never investigated a town.
Yeah. <you know? laughs>
Yeah.
That is kind of a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
It is. I mean,
and they have the whole place to ourselves.
Oh, yeah, I know. And yeah. you almost never ran into anybody,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it was really nice because it didn't matter that we had, 14 people there that night.
Mm-hmm.
You really didn't often run into anyone.
Yeah, you could have 5 people in this place, 5 people here, 5 yeah. people over there, and they never really. Occasionally you'd meet each other and talk about what you've seen and
yeah.
move
yeah.
on.
We did that. We were out by the schoolhouse. And all of a sudden, I think everybody was there. We made like a giant circle, and we were all talking, and then everybody went their different ways again.
Yeah.
And it's neat because you're walking from building to building. You can look over, and, oh, there's so-and-so over at that building, and now we see somebody walking out of that building. Yeah. And,
now, I do have to say, I got a question, and then I got to tell you guys something. Did you guys have anything happen or any weirdness in that big barn? That has like the little village or almost shops inside of it.
Well, I did. Yes and no. Yeah. Well, Nadine had heard some footsteps upstairs.
Okay.
And it was kind of was weirding them out. It was you and Lori was there? Was it you and Lori?
Well, okay. There were two noises in that building. Mm-hmm. And as with any investigation, you need to discern these things. And we did find a door.
A couple different doors.
Kind of makes a noise. Mm-hmm. But having said that, I will say we heard very heavy footsteps upstairs. Very, very heavy footsteps upstairs. Like it was a man in boots walking around in there.
Gosh.
And it was a very heavy kind of feeling when Lori and I had first walked in. You just didn't want to go near the stairs.
Okay.
And I have to say we heard the heavy footfall 2 or 3 times. Separate times.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And that's kind of neat, too, because that's that big barn. Towards the front of the property, there's this huge red barn. And it's obviously a brand new building or newer building, probably 10 years old. But it has that brand new building look. But when you go inside, I expect it to be like a storage area.
Well,
we walked inside, and it was like a little town inside the building.
Yeah.
So you still have all those antiques and all the
right.
memorabilia inside.
I think what it is that's an original an old barn.
Okay.
But they just resided it with steel.
Oh, okay.
And it's reinforced with steel.
It's used for events, and they like to, you know, have that look
yeah.
about it. They brought the historical
the ice cream
items
shop
in.
And
yeah.
The cobbler's.
It's like walking down the main street.
Yeah.
Inside
of
a building.
It's kind of
right.
neat. Yeah.
Exactly. Because they wanted to preserve the history, which is why all of those buildings are out there.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to preserve history, and you have to respect that. Even if nothing had happened all night, can you imagine? We stood in a canal keeper's house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An original, real.
I kept calling it gatekeeper, and Joe's like,
"Oh,
it's
canal actually, it's actually the, they call it the lock keeper's
lock
house.
Keepers."
Yeah.
That's
but
it.
I'm not correcting her on the canal keeper because it's the lock is on the canal.
Canal, right?
So,
yeah.
I mean, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, last week they had when you put this show out, it'll probably be like 2 or 3 weeks ago, but they had a tractor show out there, and part of me I was like, we should go out there, but we had something else planned. I mean, I kind of wanted to see the ice cream shop and all the other things. And, you know, mm-hmm. I'm sure there were people out there merchandising whatever wares they had. And that would have been interesting to see Auglaize Village in its commercial form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it was kind of, I kind of thought it would be neat to go out there for the tractor show, but we didn't go.
The sad part about Auglaize Village is that a lot of their funding has been pulled this year. And the only funding that they were getting this year is from ghost hunts and from other events that they could get. And this was to upkeep the property. And this is why when we had gone there one time, you know, there was like bat droppings and stuff because they can't afford to pay people. It's all done by volunteers. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for a place where people genuinely take the money and put it into the property, mm-hmm. it would be this place. It's an amazing place. And I don't know, it shouldn't make sense, but it does. And you'll see spirits from one building that'll go to another.
Yeah.
And it's like they've all kind of decided that this is, like you said, their town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you only go there to see the history, even that is enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, for yeah. sure.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And this, where's, I know I've been there, but where is this located again? It's in, I keep thinking Delta, Ohio. It's not.
No.
It's Defiance, Ohio,
Defiance.
Right?
Defiance.
Okay. Yeah. Auglaize Village in Defiance, Ohio. We'll put that link in the show notes, too, because...
You Google it. You Google it. It'll show up like that.
We've mentioned it so many times on the show that doing ghost hunts at these places do. People think, well, they're charging $50 to ghost hunt. Well, the thing is, that money is going back into the locations
to the
keep them up,
and the roads
so that we can go ghost hunting at these places.
Yeah. Right, and Eric Moore is the one who's. I guess you would call him your facilitator at that particular place. He's a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
He will give you the history, and I would highly encourage anyone who wants to go ghost hunting at this place, invite Eric to go with you.
Yeah.
Because they're familiar with Eric, and you're going to get a little bit more with Eric around.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I would encourage you. Say, hey, Eric, come ghost hunting with me.
It was funny. We pulled in, and I thought it was one of the group that was with us. So he drove through the yard and then parked facing the road. So I just followed him along. I'm like, pulled right up next to him. And I look over. I'm like, hey, what's up? I'm like, I don't know this person.
wasn't at the restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'll say, out of all the buildings that I went in, and I didn't get in all of them and all the space, you want to know the one place that gave me the most creeps?
Which one?
The women's restroom.
You know, you're not the only one who has said that. I asked Eric about that.
I got the heebie-jeebies in there.
I asked Eric, and do you know that there is known to have someone in there?
Wasn't someone on our team, like, whooshed or something?
Yeah,
in there?
Someone was touched in there. You know, you go to that woman's...
They were leaving, and it felt like somebody brushed by them as they were leaving the women's restroom, and they were like, what the heck?
Well,
was
I had
that?
To go bad. And so I went and I walked there by myself and I had a little flashlight and I wasn't sure. But when I got to the building, the light was on. And I was like, okay. And I walked in, but it was just the creepiest feeling. I just felt like somebody was in there. And I don't want to say I was being watched because I didn't feel that, but I just felt like there was something in there and I had to get my business done and get out of there.
Yeah, it is. Quickly. It's creepy. The bathroom is creepy.
But, you know, Joe and I really, really appreciate you guys inviting us along because, you know, we love to go ghost hunting and we like to do it with...
Well, we hadn't seen you all year.
Yeah.
I know.
All the
damn Rona.
Shut down.
It's ridiculous.
And...
Ridiculous. Stupid Rona.
Rona should have never been invented.
But, no, you know, it's always great to be able to go to these... places with people that you know and you trust and you know have just a really, really fun time to just be able to be out and finally I think that's the first time we went ghost hunting.
All of 2020. Three coming up. We've got
I was gonna say the next one is the Licking County Jail.
Yay.
Which I've been wanting to get into for a long time.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you and me both. We've
I
been trying
did
to
the
get
tour there,
there
and I know I told you the story before, but I'll tell the listeners. But there, one of the cells had a music box sitting in it. And the... Okay. We got the windows open here. You can hear it. But there was a music box, and it started playing. And the lady was like, yeah, there's a music box in this. So I thought, oh, come on. This is set up so that when they're doing the ghost tours... you hear the music box playing. So I walked over to it And it was literally just the little barrel thing and the little metal tongs in this box. I picked it up. It was not wired up. There's no batteries in it. It was just the box, the little barrel, and the tongs. Mm. And I heard it playing.
Wow, that's cool.
Can you imagine what that's going to be like when we're there and we have our paranormal music box? Did it have the
spring
box?
And the governor, too, or no?
No.
It didn't have a wind-up spring or anything?
No, I looked for that. Because, I'm like, me and Tracy are doing this tour, and it's a tour of an old building, of old jail.
I got the back door open, so.
You know, spooky. Kind of
blowing.
And I'm thinking, come on, it's set up because she mentioned it, but it didn't. I looked at it, I'm like, this is weird.
It's going to be a good night. I already can tell that we are going to see some prisoners or something. Oh,
we've been waiting forever to get into there.
Yeah.
So, when they had a few dates left, I just said, that's it. Let's go for it.
Yeah.
And then out of the clear blue, I got two more. That got planned too. So, there's literally three that we're all going on.
We got some good ones coming up.
Amazing.
Really. The jail and then Historical Society.
That's Fulton.
Fulton County. And then the Merry-Go-Round Museum, which is supposed to be unbelievably haunted. But we'll find out. Yep. We will find out. Yep. So, anyways, we really want to thank you guys for coming in. This is awesome. Great spending the evening with you guys.
You have great snacks.
I'm the hostess with the mouse.
We're just here for the food.
That's right. No better reason to be here, right? Good food's good friends.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. And we will leave in honor of the War Museum with a little bit of war from Dead End 5. We'll see you all next week.
Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.
See ya.
Bye.
The war inside my head. This is the truth that must be said. When we were young and we're looking back, you pushed at me, now I'm pushing back. We've come to terms with our ways, and we push and pull.
Welcome to the 222 Paranormal Podcast Spooktacular!
Oh, scary.
Halloween Spooktacular, Joe.
I looked in the mirror and I got scared.
I would too if I looked in your mirror.
Did you notice anything different about me?
No.
I use Just for Men.
I know, I always noticed.
I'm like, it's supposed to be light brown. It turned out black. So my mustache and my hair is black again.
There you go. But you're goth. Joe went goth, everybody.
It'll wear out in a couple of days. So, but Halloween Spectacular, we have an awesome show today.
You guys buckle up, buttercups. It's going to be a good one.
We got some great guests with us.
We have Nadine and John from Black Swamp Paranormal come to tell us all about our trip to Ogley's Village.
Yeah.
In Defiance, Ohio.
So welcome.
Thank you.
Oh, that's good. All right.